Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies, to this Sunday afternoon edition of the Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince, coming to you live from my residence in northern British Columbia here, broadcasting through the facilities of People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on shakeandwakeradio.com. We are viewer-supported stations, folks, so if you like what we're doing, you like the content, you like what these people are trying to bring forward, please reach into your pocket and throw a few bucks into the kitty. I know they would really, really appreciate it. And, of course, always thanks to my producer, Steve Roberts, who takes time to put up with me and produce these shows. Much applause to what he does for me. I would be kind of lost without him. I'm joined today by Ellis Ross. Ellis is the MLA for my area, which is Skeena, Kitimat area, for the Liberal Party of British Columbia. And when I first heard about the Liberal Party of British Columbia, I naturally affiliated them fully with what's going on with the Liberal Party in British Columbia. We're in Ottawa. And I have found out through some research that there's a big difference between what the two parties stand for. I've listened to Mr. Ross talk many times about what he sees are our concerns in our society, especially in the First Nations community and what's going on with the United Nations and some of the things that are going on with these blockades. Welcome to the show, sir, and thanks for taking time out on your Sunday. I know you're a family man, and I much appreciate the hour.
Yes, not a problem. Glad to be here.
So what's your take, Mr. Ross, on the blockades that we've just been putting up with here for the last month and a half?
You know, protest, this is the great thing about Canada. You're allowed to protest, you're allowed to have free speech, you're allowed to speak up against your leaders, but blockading is not a form of protest that I agree with, no matter what the cause. I mean, you're blockading not only the economy, but you're blockading society from getting on with life. And if these blockaders truly understood the nature of Aboriginal rights and title, reconciliation is a big part of the right to tell case law. And reconciliation is supposed to be taken in light of the larger society. And these blockaders are actually doing the opposite. Aboriginal rights and title is supposed to bring Aboriginals and non-Aboriginals together to function in a parallel society, and in most cases, in one society. I mean, let's face it, First Nations engage to a large extent in a larger society. And I mean, engaging with hospitals, money, shopping, highways, you name it. So the blockaders are actually going against the principles of reconciliation as well as principles of rights to tell case law.
Yeah, what I've seen go on in Canada here in the last couple months, I find very, very deeply disturbing, especially with our so-called rule of law in Canada and how the government has absolutely just turned a blind eye to blatant criminal activity going on that should have been, and under a normal circumstance with a government that is following the rule of law, would have come to an end a lot sooner than it did. I don't know if exactly if they're still going on. I haven't heard anything on the news about that, because right now all we're hearing about on the news is this coronavirus. There is nothing else that seems to be coming through on the information highway right now, and guys got to ask themselves if that's by design, if they're trying to distract us from stuff that's going on that they don't want us to look at. But anyways, yeah, that's what's really kind of disturbed me, is we do have in Canada two sets of rules, and a society like that doesn't function properly. I know Jody's joined us now there. Ellis, welcome to the show there, Jody, and thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Barry.
You and Mr. Ross know each other. Apparently, these two people, folks, live in the same town, very close to each other. So, yeah.
Well, I like to say, you know, Mr. Ellis Ross, you know, I believe in what he says, and he's not a guy that beats around the bush. He says it how it is, and he has a lot of respect for me, right? And a lot of politicians, they don't do that. They're afraid to say the truth. Right, we need more people to speak up in this country.
We do, and when I first heard you talk there, Ellis, on Mark Friesen's show there, I was actually very surprised. It's kind of nice to meet you at the hockey game, too, and have a little chat with you. Even though that one didn't turn out great, I would have stopped that shot in overtime, by the way.
Oh, my God. And I had to drive an hour to get home that night.
I know, and after they came back, and our local team guys was down 3-0 to Quesnel Kangaroos. In the third period, they popped three goals, and I think about 6 minutes, of course, the building just went nuts. everybody was on an adrenaline rush, and then overtime came, and of course the bad guys got the winner, and it kind of put a damper on the night, but it was nice meeting you, sir.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, but yeah, we, you know, the whole country is shutting down right now, or was, you know, the whole economy of the country is being affected by these blockades, and when court injunctions are issued, as far as my interpretation of the law is that a court injunction is something that's enforced immediately by the powers to be, the ruling police forces, which, of course, are RCMP in Canada. And yet they just seem to turn a blind eye to that. And I really got to ask myself a lot of questions. Who is in control of the RCMP in this country? And what direction are they really taking us?
Well, you know, the thing about that, there's a number of things that really troubled me about that, is because people were thought they truly were blockading highways and ports to stand up for Aboriginals and title, not knowing that the LNG projects, the forestry projects, the mining projects, they were all done in cooperation with Aboriginals based on Aboriginals and title.
Right.
And so, but you look at the larger context of what's happening, what I can't understand is, being a newcomer to the provincial politics and dabbling a little bit in federal issues, why are Canadians okay with our society going the way it's going? I don't get that.
I mean, neither do I. At some point,
we all got to realize this is really a good country when compared to other areas in the world. Why are we allowing this from the inside out to actually destroy us, including the rule of law?
And I might add on to that, Alice, is outside in, all these NGOs interference too, right? Mm-hmm. You know, how are we as a society allowing this? A paid protesters come up from America or even American funding by, you know, it's baffling.
Well, you know, I see a government that's doing nothing but driving wedges into Canadian society. These people are the masters of destruction. Is what I call them. And I'm going to say it exactly how I see it in Ottawa right now. I have not seen anything positive, and I ask people to show me something positive that the Liberal government has actually done for Canada since they've come into power. And
I don't think it's just the Liberal government. I think the NDP is on their side. Just look at the local MP for this riding. He voted against the Coastal GasLink, and he's on record and on file, you know, saying nay. And he it's hard to bite my tongue there, Barry. You know, like these guys, you know, they're supposed to be representing the people, and a lot of them are on the take. You know, to put it politely, and we got documentation showing him an actual picture sitting at the table with Sierra Club, Tides Foundation, or whoever. Right? It's just not right. You know. We got to get, you know, work for the people. You know, all people. And if it's coming from the top, and we got corrupted government, we have to start, you know, speaking up. And Mr. Ellis is one of the few politicians that's doing the right thing and speaking up. And I think we should support Mr. Ellis more because, you know, one voice isn't enough.
Well, that's why I wanted to have him on today, Jody, because I've heard him talk. And I've got a pretty good understanding how he sees. I haven't known him for a long time, but I believe I'm talking to a gentleman that's speaking truth and speaking from his heart. That's why I wanted to have him on today, because, like you said, you don't find a lot of politicians that are really actually willing to stand up to their convictions and have the courage to do so. It seems like they're all on the take now that it doesn't matter who is in power in Ottawa, even the so-called opposition parties. To me, are just absolutely playing the same agenda, just with a slightly different face. We have the NDPs, you have the Greens, you have the Progressive Conservatives, who are supposed to be conservative, but are just as much, as far as I'm concerned, on the bandwagon of the United Nations agenda in Canada as all the parties. So, what do we have as opposition voice, real opposition voice, to things that are going on in Canada? And how fast our society is changing.
You know, Barry, you know, there's a lot of layers to this, and a lot of this is in the political realm. But, you know, there's some places where Canadians and British Columbians can start. And from everything that you read and everything you see, there's got to be a way to trace this back to the system, whether it be legislation or policy. And one of the quickest ways to do this is actually address what is happening with the Canadian Revenue Agency. Now, the Canadian Revenue Agency is well aware of all these organizations that are abusing the charitable status laws around what's happening here, and to the point now where it's actually going to come out in the next couple of weeks. A lot of this is fraud. And the Canadian Revenue Agency, you know, the guys that are supposed to be regulating the charitable status foundations, like, say, Salvation Army, charitable status organization, great. Give them a tax break. Let them utilize all the tax breaks to actually provide a service for people. Red Cross, great, perfect. But all these other organizations that are feeding money into Canada and using all the loopholes and just, you know, shuffling all this money around all their internal organizations, this is a huge story. I mean, this is federal. It sure this is systemic. And you know that Vivian Cross is going to come out with some information next week or a week after. And she's been trying to explain this to me. And because I don't have a systematic mind or a financial mind, I know it's wrong. But we need some really good professional, you know, lobbyists, people understand the system, people understand charitable tax donations, to kind of fix this once and for all, because this is wrong.
But you know what? I would throw 1,000,000% of my support behind anything like that, Ellis. Because I say to people right now that if I say that people really understood the danger that our country is in, and I never thought in my 65 years on this planet that I'd be able to say this right now, but our country is in peril. And if we don't correct it very quickly, I think the window of opportunity could possibly close on us. And I never, like I said, I never thought I'd be able to say that in my life. But I look what's going on in my country. I look at what's going on to our economies. I look what's going on in our borders, our culture. All aspects of Canadian life are under attack, and it is just ramping up. And if it doesn't stop, it's going to get past the point of no return. Jody, what do you think? And then I'll get back to Mr. Ross.
Well, I think everyone's
am
on
I,
the right
am
track.
Am I overplaying here. That? Am I overplaying that?
No, I think you're underplaying it. I think people.
Well, I don't want to sound like the doomsdayer of all doomsdayer, but I'm trying to tone it down.
Yeah,
I'm being realistic about what I see.
You know me; I'm a straight shooter. I won't tone it down, and I don't think Mr. Ellis Ross will tone it down either. But I know this: I know there's at least 32 companies or groups or organizations in this country that are getting paid by the Moore Foundation. And the total amount of money is pouring into that was $11.1 billion. And just in the Skeena riding alone, I believe, I could be wrong here, from 2007 to 2014, 27 million in our riding, just to sort of like block all our natural resources, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, the government's been caught funding all kinds of groups that lobby against resource development in Canada. So they're using our money to shoot us in the foot. And Canadians are good with this? I mean, it's the same thing as the CBC. You want to talk about a joke in our society, a completely bought and paid for government media outlet. The only thing you're ever going to hear on the CBC right now is what the government wants you to hear. You won't hear any real information. They don't touch it.
Well,
Mr.
That's
Ross.
Well, you know, it's when you think about this, it's not just Canada. I mean, every democracy, every country is actually dealing with foreign influence in one form or another. But the difference between Canada and the United States and Australia, the United States and Australia have legislation right now that speaks against foreign influence, and they're going further. Canada has not even taken the first steps to address it. We tried to put together a private members bill, Andrew Wilkinson, leader of our party, tried to put in the private members bill to actually get foreign money out of our politics. And it never saw the light of day because the sitting government wouldn't bring it up for debate. We actually had a debate on this to get foreign money out of our economy. And for some reason, the NDP wanted to vote on it. They didn't end the debate. And the NDP and the Green Party voted this motion down. I mean, we can't even get to the first steps of actually realizing this in our legislatures. So there's no way this is going to get addressed federally or provincially until our leaders, you know, start to admit, yes, this is a problem.
Well, it kind of really shows you kind of how deep the corruption runs in the governments of our country right now, in my opinion. What I see going on right now, it astounds me. It really does. And we see example after example of corruption in our government. The law does not apply to our prime minister, or else he would be criminally charged at this point, just for what went on with SNC-Lavalin alone. Multiple criminal charges should have arose out of that. If it had been you or me doing something like that, we'd be in jail right now and probably there for the next 20 years of our life.
You know, that is an excellent point. You know, I was trying to talk to people about how bad this charitable tax issue is with the Canadian Revenue Agency, and I pointed out to them, if you had done this, if you had kind of played around with the rules and loophole of taxation, CRA would be down your throat so fast.
Oh, man, would they ever.
Charitable organizations in our communities, you know, the little ones that do the, you know, food for the homeless on your street, you know, they're only pulling in maybe $20,000, $30,000 a year. They get analyzed, they get audited, and they get punished if they don't follow the rules. But meanwhile, these organizations that are funneling and spreading money around their own little circles to the tune of hundreds of million dollars, they don't get audited? Come on.
Absolutely. People just don't understand, Mr. Ross, the depth of corruption in the government. The people still out there right now, that sure, they know that there's a little bit of this going on, a little bit of that going on, but it's just kind of like, for them, it's just business as usual. But they really don't understand what's going on. They really, the common person, because like I said, a lot of people still, unfortunately, go to CBC and CTV, and mainstream media outlets to get their information about what's going on in Canada. And as long as you continue to do that, you will control the masses. If you control the media, you control the masses.
And hey, Barry.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I might add this. Mr. Ross and I Mr. Ross was in the event that I was in Kitimat there a couple of days ago with Vivian Krause. And if anyone's listening, I highly recommend this video that was produced called Over the Barrel. I don't know if you guys talked about it yet.
I've seen it. I've watched it.
Very good information on there. And, you know, there is questions asked to Mr. Ross there and Vivian and Shane there on the stages. And they asked and answered all the questions. And, you know, there's a lot of true facts in this video or movie. I highly recommend people should watch this.
You know, there's things in that movie that should rile your temper a little bit. It doesn't. Something's wrong. How badly we have been taken to the cleaners by corporations that are just raping this country right now. That's a deep subject to get into, but that's basically what's happening in Canada. Our country's being sold out underneath our feet. This is the richest resource-based country in the world, bar none. We should be all getting a check from the government every month instead of being run under the bus like we are by this government. I see this government spending billions and billions of our children's money, because it's not our money, it's our children's and our children's children's money, on foreign programs and foreign influence, trying to buy a seat, the United Nations, all the money that they put into Africa here in the last 3 or 4 months, Trudeau trying to buy his seat on the United Nations Security Council. It's just absolutely mind-boggling. We have Canadians that are sleeping on the street. We have old-age pensioners in Canada that are starving to death.
We got mercury in the water.
We got mercury in the drinking water. We got so many issues on the First Nations reserves that need addressing by this government, and they make all kinds of promises to get into power, but when they get there, they turn their back on all of them. I have yet to see, except with the exception of legalizing cannabis, anything that Trudeau's stuck with.
How I look at some of this, Barry, it's just like the Americans are going through to their elections right now, and they use just like Canadian politicians, all the big parties, they use the color people or the First Nations as a pawn. They promise this and that, and it's just a ploy, like it's the sympathy card. But then when the crunch time comes, nothing gets solved. They're just using words, basically, right?
Mm-hmm. It's called word salads. Mm. But I see something different in you, Mr. Ross, and I'm like I said, I'm glad to have you on today, because we have so many things that need correcting in our society, and very, very few of our so-called elected representatives are even talking about some of the critical issues, and we need these conversations right now.
Well, you know, in the case of this, like it was like my previous job, I didn't want it, but I could see an issue and people wanted me to be a part of the solution. And so being a politician is a title I don't really care for, it because it's the politics is basically not what's going to solve this. If we're going to solve this, we actually got to take a good hard look at what Canadians stand for, what we want to achieve for the future. And it can't be based on the rhetoric and the misinformation coming from across the border. It can't be like that. If Canadians truly want to have a conversation about oil, gas, mining, forestry, great. And let's have a good one based on facts, and let's not have influence by anybody else. We're pretty smart on our own. We don't need any outside influence.
What's your take on the this unbelievable hype going on about the coronavirus? What's your take on that?
What do you
see going on right now? And then I'd like to add Jody's opinion, and I'll give you my opinion of what I see going on.
Sure. I just see that it's gotten out of control. It wasn't handled very well in terms of communication. It led to panic buying and hoarding. And I just think that it would have been a lot better if we got honest right out of the gates with quick facts and not in reporting that didn't actually panic the public. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know how to get a handle on it anymore.
It is crazy. What do you think, Jody? What do you think is going on?
Well, what I think Trudeau is not a good leader, period. But what I don't understand is Roxit Road?
Roxit Road.
Yeah, Rebel News did a little video on that. And they're still letting people cross the border, not even getting tested, right? So now if they're exposed, they're exposing other people. You know, first of all, that's illegal what they're doing, crossing that border, right? We have proper port of entries, just like all the other migrants or immigration, you know, do the proper way. But now, you know, we don't know who's coming across the border. They could be COVID-19. So I now think...
Who's packing their bags for them?
The Canadian government.
The RCMP, man. people that are supposed to be enforcing the law. They're packing their bags across the border. And how many of those officers are possibly being exposed? What kind of precautions are being taken place?
Hey, Barry, it's just like the story I heard, yesterday or the day before? I think we have to, you know, crack down on this situation harder on a few fronts, right? I heard there was a couple that visited a country that was affected by COVID-19. They got tested in Vancouver. BC Health said, okay, what are you guys going to do? Oh, we'll self-quarantine yourself. But they didn't ask them where they lived. So they drove back from Vancouver all the way up north. So, you know, anyone that did that drive, they have to get gas. They sleep overnight. They get food. So now they're all exposed to, they just spread the virus. Second point I want to make is, you know, there's a lot of single moms, single parents, single fathers out there collecting social, I don't know what it's called nowadays, like a welfare check.
Social assistance.
Thank you. And now they're going to be hurting because all the shelves are bare. You know, people are panic mode and, you know, shopping. You know, like how about these people where they're going to be needing some for their kids and all that, right? Supplies for the kids.
I went to the wholesale club on Terrace here today, guys, and I couldn't believe. Well, you guys have all been in there before. I couldn't believe the shelves were all empty. Yeah. And I'm walking around and going, what is going on here?
Well, there's two confirmed cases up north here.
I heard about that.
Yeah. So
of course, they're going to, it's going to be, you know, all ramped up. I can see them probably shutting down the public facilities, the skating rinks, and probably hockey will be shut down for the year, which really sucks. We got 2 weeks left. They're going to probably shut that down. We're seeing the whole world shut down over this virus that all of a sudden appeared out of nowhere, but seems to be having a real devastating effect on the whole planet right now. We've got people in a state of fear. Confusion seems to be running wild. I have so many thoughts about what's been going on with this and who's behind it, if this was manufactured, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of questions about it.
I honestly believe it's man-made.
I believe this was unleashed for a reason. And there's lots of reasons and lots of things that would benefit from this all of a sudden coming up in society. And we could go down multiple rabbit holes. We don't have enough time to go all those rabbit holes today, but there's multiple thoughts that this could take us in, multiple directions of why this is happening in society. you know, the common flu now this year in the United States of America, and I was looking at numbers the other day. The numbers I saw in the first 3 months of this year, up around 23,000 Americans apparently have died from the flu. It has a mortality rate of about 9%, this virus from this year, but you hear nothing about that on mainstream, nothing at all. My understanding on this coronavirus is that it's got a mortality rate of around 3.5%. And yet we have the mainstream right now just fanning the flames on this. That major league sporting, all the major league sports are shutting down. All the economy is shut down over this thing. To me, it just absolutely reeks of agenda. But that's the kind of way I see it. It's just too much all of a sudden. And what is the actual potential for this thing? Is it going to kill millions? Well, how many millions of people does the flu kill every year?
Well, you're talking about a global context and how Canada fits into that. We're a small country, 37 million of us. But I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You're talking about a perfect storm that's happening, and it only comes along once in a while. I mean, the Great Depression was an example, but that was extreme. But here you're talking now about a virus that's gone all around the world. You're talking about this blockade that shut down Canada. And now you're going to talk about the Saudis and the Russians going to flood the market to get rid of all the small players in the global oil market. Yes. Well, Canada, just given our circumstances, we're a small player. I mean, the United States has already got us selling oil to them, what, 20, 25 bucks a barrel? It's going to go down? Mm. So Canada, I mean, either you get on board with this corporate global market and stop pandering to the other big countries and stop allowing foreign influence and start figuring out how to make Canada stronger, because this global market economy we're in, I mean, Saudis and Russians, they play pretty hard ball.
Well, you know, one would have to ask himself, why have we landlocked Canadian oil and are getting oil from Saudi Arabia through East Coast ports when we could be shipping our own oil across the country and benefiting the Canadian economy in the terms of billions and billions of dollars every year? I have 100 questions for the government. Why is this not being done? Why have we stopped this use of our own oil, which is way more ethically clean than stuff that's coming from Saudi Arabia? And if you're supporting Saudi Arabia, in my opinion, my friends, you're supporting one of the most evil regimes in the world based on their violations of human rights. And so I ask myself, why are we doing that when we should be supporting Canadian economy and using our own oil, because we've got a ton of it in Alberta?
Especially when you consider we're selling Canadian oil to the United States for 20 bucks a barrel, which is probably, you know, 2/3 below the market price. But I don't know what we're buying Saudi oil for. There's a big price differential there.
It is. We're paying 60. I was kind of looking into that myself, sir, and it infuriates me when just the thought of the amount of oil that's in the ground in Canada. A simple pipeline across the country, we would stop supporting one of the most evil regimes in the world and put billions of dollars into the Canadian economy simply by using our own oil. Does that not make sense? Wouldn't that be something that the rest of the country would want to support because of the benefits? But it's going backwards. Why is that happening? Well, I could ask you, there's actually probably 15 or 20 questions I could ask the government. Why are they doing this when none of it benefits Canada? It's like the $40 billion that they contracted out to China for the pipes on the LNG project in Kitimat here. $40 billion should have been spent in Canada. And the offshoot economy of that $40 billion, reports I read, would have been around $100 billion benefit to Canada's economy. And yet the government, in their wisdom, gave it to the Chinese. Why was that done? I got a million questions for him, Ellis. A million. Go ahead. With no answers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I didn't consider that Saudi oil question coming into the East Coast of Canada for all the years I've heard it. But now, given that the global economy on oil and gas, yeah, I'm starting to question myself.
Well, it's only common sense, isn't it? I mean, we've got to look at things with a common sense approach. And nothing about what the government's doing makes any common sense for the benefit of Canada. It would make common sense if you wanted to support another entity in the world or another organization. It would make perfect sense. I just don't see any common sense in what they're doing at all. And it's an example of many things, in my opinion, that the government's doing that doesn't make any common sense. And like I said, I got a list of them, but not enough time to talk about them all today. That's for sure.
It makes perfectly sense if you're part of the United Nations Agenda 2030.
Bingo.
Yep.
Bingo.
and Trudeau's all on board on that.
Well, hey guys, I got to get back to my mom and my wife. We're down here in medical treatment for Vancouver right now, so okay. I got to go pick up a car and drive them to the next appointment.
Okay, well that's okay. I'll continue on the conversation for the next half hour with Jody. If you have to leave on us, Mr. Ross.
Hey, thanks for everything, guys. Keep it
See
up.
See you, Alice.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure having you in, sir.
Thank you. Talk to you guys later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye.
Did I say something wrong?
No, you never.
No. Well, you know, everything we talk about, Jody, when we start talking about stuff, the rabbit hole that we start going down has many rabbit holes connected to them. And I go down the rabbit holes now. I pretty well have to take a GPS with me.
Well, hey,
you'll find three or four going in different directions, and you start following them, and they've got three or four more going off them. Yeah. Before you know it, you're lost.
Every time I talk to people around, you know, if they're left or right, doesn't matter. I said, just look into this United Nations, you know, Agenda 21, 2030, you know, and dig deep in it, and you'll understand. You'll understand everything that's going on, right? You know, if they're open-minded, you know, and want to learn or see hard facts, they'll understand what's going on in the world.
Yeah, well, it takes people to get a real slap before they even start paying attention. Sometimes it's like Ellis said there in the first bit of our conversation, that it blows them away that Canadians cannot see what is going on around them and what it represents for the future of the country.
They just seem blind. A lot of Canadians are laid back and apologetic, and they don't want to step, you know, make the first step, you know, because now our voices are so suppressed. You know, from freedom of speech, they'll get called racist or bigot or whatever. But we need more people to speak up.
Well, they're attacking freedom of speech left, right, and center in this country. People are in a state now where they're scared to even, you know, the general population, you know, are getting to a point where they're scared to speak against the government. They're very efficient at what they're doing here. And, you know, it takes a lot of guts to stand up for what you believe in Canada now. It does, because we know, Jody, and it sounds crazy, but I honestly believe in the next little while, I'm not going to say what, how long, but in the near future, real possibility to come after little guys like me that is just speaking against the government and are saying things that they don't want people to hear or understand.
That's like some speech of Ronald Reagan did way back when, and he was explaining to the people, you have to get out of your mind what's left and right. Stop dividing the country. You got to be more sensible, because the country can only go up or down, right? Stop, you know, dividing the country. You know, do that, you go down. If everyone, you know, is united, we go up. Just like with our oil and gas. We have 840,000 kilometers of pipeline in this country. You know, if they want the liquid natural gas to go to China, that'll lower the global footprint, right? We're a neutral country for a carbon footprint. This, any protesting, hey, go to India, go to China, protest them. Don't protest us. You know, we're doing good. You know,
we're actually below carbon neutral.
Yeah.
Based on our tree mass in Canada, but the politicians never talk about that.
That's right.
Some of the figures I read, Jody, and I looked at three different reports on that, and apparently our tree mass dictates that we absorb about 10 times as much carbon as we produce in Canada.
I believe we have like 314 billion trees in this country, they said.
Yeah. So, you know, do they ever talk about that? Does that report ever come in front of a government coffers? They wouldn't want the public to know that, because they wouldn't be able to justify the carbon tax. But we're absorbing carbon for the rest of the world. And when did carbon become a bad thing?
Yeah, no, it's good for the thing.
I mean, our whole world is carbon-based. We're a carbon-based creature ourselves. It's meant to be part of our world. We're at 400 parts per million now on carbon concentration in the atmosphere. And I saw three different reports of that, videos that I watched, and I followed a couple, and I read a couple reports on exactly what our parts per million of carbon concentration in our atmosphere is. It's around 400. Well, the optimum percentage in the atmosphere is around 1,800 parts per million. So we're like 1,400 parts away from where it would be great for growth of life on the planet. And people are talking about a war on carbon. Yeah. Insanity, buddy. It's insane.
Hey, Barry, you want to hear some crazy stats here that I got?
Sure.
Actual, honest, true facts here.
Are you going to talk me off my chair?
Yeah, it might.
Okay. I'll get ready.
Canada, we're at about 1.7 carbon, right? We're at 1.7 nationwide, right?
Okay.
Okay. Here's China, 28.2.
Mm-hmm.
U.S., 15.9. India, 6.2. Russia, 4.5. Japan, 3.6. Germany, 2.2. Korea, 1.7. Iran, 1.7. All those countries I just said and mentioned, zero carbon tax there. Zero. So, first of all, why are we paying it? And I think United Nations is involved big time there.
Absolutely. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that this is the biggest tax grab and cash grab in Canadian history. That there's absolutely no reason for this tax to be levied on the people, but they're going to make billions of dollars off it. And they need that so they can give it away to foreign countries. I mean, what this government has done is absolutely put a debt on your great-grandchildren's backs. And it's going to take that long if we stop the madness right now, Jody, to correct the problem, balance the budget. But you know what? That's not part of the plan. It's not intended. It will never balance. It's not intended to ever balance. It's intended to get to a point where it eventually collapses.
Yeah.
And that point is, well, look at what the market's been doing here, Jody.
Oh, yeah.
That's the insanity here in the last couple weeks, last week especially. And if we look at the Great Depression, at the market trends and the stock trends just prior to the Great Collapse, you'll see it's almost a mirror image of exactly what's going on right now.
Yeah.
So are we going to see that event happen again? Well, a lot of organizations and people that I've been following, guys like the Prophecy Club and I can't even think of his name right now. The guy that I follow on market predictions and stuff like that. I can't remember his name because he's well known. But they're all telling us that eventually we're going to see a collapse of the dollar. It's inevitable. It's a big bubble. But what's going to happen when that happens, Jody? That's the million-dollar question. What do you think is going to happen when the dollar collapses?
Well, chaos. Chaos, man. Holy... Yeah,
you think about that for a minute. All the possible, what's going to happen when people's money all of a sudden becomes worthless?
Hey, can I go back to that carbon thing for a second?
Sure.
I went to China there about a year ago, or a little over a year and a half ago, and I landed there. Then I see their skies. I see their pollution there. Then I fly back to Vancouver, Canada. I'm like, you know, we have pollution, but hey, not like theirs. You know, I think Canadians, you know, or the paid protesters, the fake ones, should really take a look what's going around the world, right? And, you know, they're at 28%. That's like a third of the world, you know, pollution.
Yeah.
You know,
so-called greenhouse gases.
Yeah.
Coming at one point. But then if we look at temperature models for the planet for the last 20,000 years, Jody, we'll see stuff that's happened that they would have no explanation for, because everything that happens to the planet on this planet is controlled by the sun. I believe that we're having a great impact on the actual environment on this planet. Mm-hmm. I believe we're having a great impact on life species, on mammals, on our oceans. I believe we're having a tremendous impact on that. But the actual climate, man has very little, if any, impact on that. That our climate is controlled by the sun, and it always will be. I've read multiple reports that have us going into a solar minimum and a mini ice age. Well, let's see how that plays out, if it does, with their models in the next 10 years.
And a lot of those fake reports come from the United Nations scientists.
Well, of course. You know, they say that 97% of the scientists agree. Well, they're all 97% are organizations that are funded by the United Nations. It's, you know, we see it like example after example of the fox guarding the henhouse. It doesn't matter where you look. It's like the big pharma companies testing their own drugs and releasing a report to the FDA and the CDC that after 3 weeks of studies, their drugs are safe for public consumption. They put a rubber stamp on it. And the next day, they're on the TV with multiple side effects. They don't talk about that. They do. It's usually longer than the actual atom. What this drug is going to do to give you clear skin, man. Isn't that great? You're going to have clear skin, but you're going to die. But you'll die with clear skin, so you look good in the casket, guys. Insanity.
I heard with this coronavirus, there's a UBC has an angle on it, and this an Israel has an angle on it. So I don't know why that's not being broadcast in the news. I'm just looking up something here for you, Barry. Trying to find something.
I've seen a lot of misinformation out there.
Yeah,
I see this being hyped up by certain situations. Like I said, to me, it all stinks of. It might be a flashpoint. It might be the pivoting point that we've been talking about for years. Where, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, we in conversations on radio, we were saying, you know, there's going to come a time when all of a sudden the poop is really going to hit the fan. And whether this is that time or not, that's really hard to say. But we're looking at how this is affecting the general population around the planet. The response that they're getting is exactly what they want. That fear has an incredible way of manipulating people's brains and to a state of chaos, right? Well, a brain that's in chaos, Jody, is very easy to control.
Yeah. Hey, Barry.
Yeah.
You know this little girl that the left always promotes, Greta Thunberg?
Yes. Yes.
Here's another young lady that doesn't get credit, and I think every listener should listen to this young lady. Her name's Naomi Sebit.
Right. I've actually
Yeah, MISEIBT. You know, and she sets Greta straight with the true actual facts. You know, people should listen to her, eh?
Yeah.
I think she's German, nice young lady, and she just deals with facts, right?
Well, you won't get a moment of mainstream media coverage on her. Not 1 minute. They will totally ignore her because it's completely against the agenda. Greta is so much into the program. She is just a perfect little example of nothingness that is influencing people around this planet. She should just go back to school and stop telling her what to do, period. But people are accepting this, and she's being funded. Well, look at who's funding. Greta Thunberg, man. Take a look. You gotta follow the money, man. Anytime you follow the money, it'll take you really to the truth real quick.
Yeah.
She's being funded by some pretty evil people.
Oh, yeah.
Not a good intention for us, man.
Yeah, George Soros.
Oh, yeah. The whole cabal.
Her manager, Greta Thunberg, is Justin Trudeau's, he's the manager for the Justin Trudeau Foundation or the Trudeau Foundation, something like that. So there's ties between Trudeau and Greta.
Yeah, I had somebody come on the internet today and put out a whole bunch of fake news telling us that I'm calling people out on this because releasing information that Trudeau has been given warrants for his arrest and blah, 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 international crimes, and Tom Hanks has been arrested and trying
to... Yeah, I've seen that.
Buddy, you better start... If you're going to start putting that kind of information out, you better... be able to provide me with where you're getting that information from. Well, yeah, if you're going to say something like that, you better be able to tell me where you're getting it from, or we're going to call you out on it.
Facts.
Yeah. You can't get on the internet, and I see a lot of people doing that, just making statements without being able to back it up. So those kind of people are just about as detrimental to what we're trying to do in the world, Jody, as the bad guys.
Oh, they're Antifa, or they're the left, or they're the paid protesters. All they want to do is create chaos, eh?
When they were in town here in Terrace, they were standing in front of the courthouse. You know, they were up there beating their drums and cancel all pipelines and they'll protect their land. Got out of the truck, and I went up and talked to a few of them, Jody. I tell you, I ruffled a few feathers.
I bet you did.
Oh, I did. I had them all after about 30 seconds of speaking very loud in front of people that were standing there watching them and calling them out for exactly what they were. I had about 10 of them just glaring at me. See, they would just love to attack me and beat the crap out of me. But it was probably a little bit too much public place, but you could just feel the bullets coming off them when I started calling them out and telling them exactly what they are and what they're doing here. They didn't like that at all. I won't repeat it because I think there were some very, very harsh words exchanged, but somebody's got to call them out.
Yeah. Oh, I had some crazy facts here. I want, before we go off the air, what did I get here today? Oh, gee, Barry, you got me going. You just rang a bell here. It was something about Trudeau's, since he took office, the Syrian refugees or the migrants or something like that, 75 or 76% of them
are still unemployed.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, so, you know.
That's since 2016 when he started the program.
Yeah.
But, what do people expect? What do you expect? These people, I'm not a racist person. I mean, our country was formed on immigration code, Jody. And, we've talked about this many, many times, but these people that were allowing to come into the country, sure, they need a great place to live too, but they're not going to assimilate to Canadian culture. And that's the big difference. You know, when our forefathers came here, they were willing to assimilate to the country they came to, live by the laws, and they knew they had to work hard if they were going to get anything in Canada. It absolutely infuriates me, Jody, that an illegal walks across the border, claims asylum in Canada. The next day or the day after, the Canadian government gives them folks what they call a gold medical card. Okay?
Yeah.
Somebody that's only been in Canada for 2 days has never contributed a penny to the Canadian economy, never paid a penny of taxes in Canada, is given a gold health card, which entitles them to the best health care in Canada, bar none. Free dental, which no Canadian gets. Why is this happening in our society? Why is the government putting this huge, huge divide between the white, normal Canadian or Canadian of Canadian descent that has been here, and I'm not saying white, but all Canadians that have been here and are real Canadian citizens, have gone through the processes, have paid their taxes, blah, 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 and this person walks into the country and 2 days later, they're given the best health care possible in Canada. What's going on, Jody?
Well,
somebody explain that to me. Where's the justification? What are you trying to do?
I'll explain it to you. It's Justin Trudeau's votes, right?
Of course it is.
Wants them for votes.
Of course it is. That's why they want to bring in a million people a year. Because every one of them, they're going to make them eligible to vote. Pretty soon, they'll have vote. Any chance that we have of stopping this madness in this country?
Yeah. I had an elderly gentleman talking to me one time, and he was explaining to me the difference between immigration now and back then. He goes, the Canadian government didn't pay us to come here. We had to pay out of our own pocket to catch a boat, come over, and find a job, right? They worked hard. This is what you said. This Canada was built on all different nationalities, but they wanted to work. And now the people are here, Canadian government is paying them more than our senior citizens, and they don't want to work because why should they if they're getting free money?
Well, if they have six children, they're getting, $600 a month per child from the Canadian government. I know that they're getting allowances and everything else, but they're being put on a pedestal above everyday hardworking Canadians that have made this country what it is. They're stomping on us, Jody. It's absolute hypocrisy that a government can justify that. There's nothing in me that can explain why you would do that to everyday hardworking Canadians when we're suffering. The old age pensions in Canada are suffering. A lot of them can't even afford to eat. It's really, really sad.
That's right. Yet
they're treating the people that are coming to this country far, far better. Why is that going on?
If you just look at our Canadian dollar, right? We're getting taxed on every dollar we make between, say, 30% to 38%, right? So right there, we're getting, 65 cents on every dollar we earn now. Then you add the carbon tax in, or the PST and the GST, So we're making, we'll just say 50 cents on every dollar. So if you get a $30 an hour wage you're making, cut that in half, sure, you're working for basically minimum wage for $15 an hour, right? And that's a good paying job, $30, but you're all these taxes we're paying, carbon tax, income tax, or whatever, PSD, our dollars is, you know, the Canadian family needs more help.
That's an understatement.
The working class.
Well, when I looked at the PTC's platform on taxes, it made absolute sense to me, everything they proposed. I don't know why Canadians couldn't look at that, what they wanted to set down for income tax rates, and how it was going to be scaled to what you actually made, so that people under $100,000 were keeping a good percentage of their money instead of paying 50% of it to the government. Why people couldn't look at that, I don't understand it, Joe.
Yeah, the PPC, what they were going to do, they're going to stop all foreign funding, right? You know, stop all corporate bailouts, right? Unless there was a natural disaster, you know, Canada will be there, you know, like a hurricane or a tsunami, we'd be there, right? So we're going to stop all this nonsense, right? We're going to get out of United Nations. Then after the second year, we're going to lower all taxes. That was our plan, right? So after the second year, everybody would get a reduce in taxes, I think at least by 15% or something like that.
I looked at all aspects of the party, and compared to what the rest of the parties were putting forward, I didn't see any comparison, the logic in how the PPC was going to go forward to trying to fix the problems we got. It would take years and years and years to fix the problems we got. Are we past the point of fixing them now? I don't know, Jody. Now the government has got so much power now that it's almost like they're untouchable. Like, what would it take for Justin Trudeau to actually get arrested when he has blatantly broken criminal laws in Canada, and nothing ever is done about it. We're getting into a state of full-blown fascism in Canada. How else would you describe it?
Yeah.
And the Canadian public is still walking around like they're half asleep, that they don't see. They can't see the trees to the forest, I don't know.
Trudeau reminds me of that dictator from Cuba.
His father. His dad. Hey, Daddy.
You played on that, eh?
Well, you know, hey, Jody, there's a lot to be seen there. And if you ever done facial recognitions and put them beside each other, and you tell me it's just it's beyond uncanny, okay?
I'd say let's do a DNA test.
I would say that if I was a betting man, I would bet a lot on the DNA coming back and telling us exactly what we know already. Oh, that's a show for another day, Jody, because we know that Margaret was a very loose goose, and her marriage to Pierre was a fabricated and set-up marriage to give the perception of a normal Canadian family. We know that. We know what's going on with Pierre Trudeau and his visits to the Bohemian Grove and his attendance at the Bilderberg meetings, and all about Pierre and what he started in Canada, and his son is just finishing it off for him.
Yeah, Margaret was very polite and very...
obliging.
Nice lady.
Obliging. She was obliging. Yeah, here's my wife. This is my wife. Excuse me. Hey, listen, we're down to the last minute, Jody. Gotta let you go here in a minute. Thanks for coming in. We're gonna take a break here for 4 minutes. We're gonna have a hereditary chief in, a bunch of other people for the next hour. But thanks for coming in. And I'm sorry Mr. Ross had to leave on us early.
That's all right.
But thanks for covering.
Thanks for having me again, Barry.
It's been a pleasure. Well, welcome back to second hour, and thanks to Jody and Mr. Ellis or Mr. Ross for joining me. The first hour was a good conversation. I'm joined the second hour here by Stan Gwenyu, who is a high chief, and Katie McGinnis. And I believe they have a couple other people in on the same call, but I'm going to let Katie introduce the group and what's on their mind today. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hello, I'm Katie, and this is
Chief Gwenyu, Stan Stanislaus George Nickel.
And
I come from Frog Clan.
Okay, and is there anybody else in that group with you? I thought there was maybe another person in the room with you.
Yeah, we have a few other. Bob, who's a very good friend and sort of our driver and our historian. And we've got Ken, who's a very good friend, and he's how I met Chief a few years ago. And we've been helping Chief with his battle here where we are. And Chief has a lot of things that he'd like to say and explain to people and let people know that he's not been around for a while and kind of the reason why.
Okay, Chief, why don't you take some time and explain to people what's going on with you? And I heard a bit of it the other day, and I'd like to hear the rest of it from you, sir.
Okay. I'll tell you all my background, and then we'll go into the system. You know, I am born, when they say the pregnant when you're born, I am born in the pregnant area because I'm born on my territory. That's Morristown, and I will get in that line. And I was under the Batlat system, and there's four houses in the Batlat system. One is neutral, would be caribou, would be neutral all the time. When we're frog to do an introduction, then the caribou sits there. But if the beaver do an introduction, the beaver sits there. And the wolf, same thing.
Okay, just stand, just for a minute. Yeah. I think you're confusing me, and I already know, because you've explained it lots of times.
Okay.
Stan, how many clans are there? Is there five clans, or is there four clans?
There's four houses, and each house got four clans. That's 16 clans.
What are the four clans?
Frog, beaver, wolf, and caribou.
All right. So what chief are you? You're Chief Gwanu of the Frog Clan, correct?
Yeah.
And you're the highest chief of the Wet'suwet'en because?
Because when people get their name, it's handed down. And you got to climb from the bottom to get to the top. And I was born into my territory, so I was trained all the way to do that. And then
you're the oldest and highest hereditary.
I'm oldest and the highest hereditary chief of people that come from Fort St. James. They got a little slant language. They call us Wet'suwet'en. It became Wet'suwet'en. Wet'suwet'en means standing on a rock, frog, big frog on a rock. And we are Carrier Nation. We're all from Babine Carrier Nation for years. And we've done our Batlats under that system.
So where did the fifth clan come from? If there's only four clans and only four brothers and cousins in each, where did this fifth clan come from? And who are they?
Fifth clan is made up. They came from Gijikukla. They're Gixan. But half of their family call themselves Gixan. Still, they still get names from over there. But these people, 1985, people got their rights back. First day they came back, they came with force. They went down to the canyon and chased everybody out. So and then I had to get on the radio to tell them, the white people, to all come back fishing. They think we owe them something. We don't owe them because all the C-31, we're trying to stop that land claim. We outvote them, still went ahead by the lawyers. And they keep moving it away because...
When were you chief?
I was elected chief 84 to 95. And I ran nine times in 10 years. The day they moved back, they kicked me out. They're trying to get in as a chief. They couldn't make it. And
who's they?
Who was it that kicked you out?
The people that moved back, you call them C-31 or franchise, or you call them urban Indian or non-status or wannabe. I don't know.
So you're saying when these people came back that the things started changing, trying to accept them into your community?
Yeah. Just when I was elected, they came back. And I went through 10 years of tough time. They keep kicking me out or try to change the rules, and they had so much meeting. I put neighborhood watch. They got caught themselves. So,
and during that time, people have to understand, you had the Dalmuk trial going on. You had major land claims going on. You had the Highway of Tears, of which Chief has two of his nieces almost back-to-back on. And that was during the time when, you know, a lot of bad things that I understand were going on up there.
When I was elected, and I keep getting elected, but one time we know the people that moved back. We know why they left the village, because I sat in some of them. Some of them did bad things, and some of them went in the army. Some of them married white people. and they moved away, some of them sleeping with their own family, so they were kicked off the reserve. And they, now they come back with no program. And I tried to make PCR against them. Their lawyer said, I can't do that to my own native, but they used that against me.
So during that time also, there was the land claims that was going on, and chief at that time was a hereditary chief and an elected chief for Morristown. And there was, from what I understand, a lot of shenanigans, different meetings, and chief was put in jail with other Carrier Nation chiefs and other, the Athabascan Nation too. These chiefs were put in jail for crimes against women. All of them, easy to prove, not easy to prove. I heard of women being paid off to speak against chief, and some of the other chiefs that were doing land claim negotiations at that time were all put in jail. And some of them admitted to the crimes for no reason, just to get out of jail. And the only reason right now, and we're in year 26 of chiefs, pardon me? Exile from home, right? And it should be over after 25 years, and they've just reenacted it again, right? That he can't go home on claims that he's a danger to these women. And the only reason, and we have the paperwork, is that he won't say that he did it, that he won't say that he did any harm to any of these women, and that he will not take courses. The other men that went to jail, and Chief can tell you about some that even died there, they all admitted just to get out or to get money to get out of jail. Chief never did. And to this day, and I have the psychiatric reports that say that he won't admit to doing something. Well, I said to the parole officer, I said, well, I wouldn't admit to doing something I didn't do. So there we are. Right now at this present time, Chief is sitting out here in front of a judge where we are, and because he's got a Section 810 that he can't go home. He hasn't had one for the last 3 years. He's done his 25 years last year. Why? I want to know. I chased down the Crown Prosecutor in Smithers. I chased down her again in Prince George. And they haven't answered our letters as to why. Why they're still holding this after 25 years. This is 26th year. He still can't go home.
See, what happened is way back, they were called Tribal Council when they first moved back. That went broke as the land claim was going. And my brother-in-law, Dan Michel, was a chief. He bailed them out with the other chiefs, 9 chiefs. And then that went broke, so they call themselves hereditary chief. He bailed them out again with the other chiefs. And when I became chief, I bailed them out on a hereditary, on a treaty office. They call it treaty office. When we were told it was given back to the chief of the community, back to the Patlats, but when they got money, it goes back to them. And when I sat down with all of them, I says, when we were paying their bills off to Royal Bank, I said, no more treaty office, no more. The land claim is over. Let white people go back reality. Let reserve go back to the reserve and do what, and give the names back, like you said when you first started. Give the names back, no more. It sat down. I sat it down. It was quiet for 6 months, 7. After I got it, they got me in jail. They started that again. When I came out for my appeal, all of a sudden my wife telling me there's a fifth clan. I said, there'll never be a fifth clan. Before, when I sat down that thing, they're trying to get it going. I said, no, there's no fifth clan. Them guys, C31 or whatever they call it, they came back to the village. They don't want to be in the Batlat system. They don't want to bring their old stuff out because they can't take it like we do. The sex program never used to go to court or any other things. Everything we dealt with it in the Batlats. When something do wrong in Smithers, we bring the person in. Whoever did the damage, he got paid in the Batlats, so he doesn't do it again. But these other people just won't come in. And then when one guy, they predicted he was going to reoffend in 6 months. We tried to work with him, but it happened. And it happened to the first one that charged me. I was riding back with my two boys from Smithers, and I caught a he gave me a ride because the other ride we were too full, car were too full, so I rode back with him. And then he stopped at the place. Me and my kids got out and went home. I heard next day he raped her and her mother. And they took him off. It cost $30,000. My social worker put up $10,000. Adam put up $10,000. Oh, I shouldn't use name. A guy put up $10,000. And the land claim put up $10,000. Just to get, he said he was a land claim chief. So we thought we'd do that. I went with it because we thought we were going to bring in my bat lads. All the chief can talk to him. They tricked me. Anyway, when we brought him in, as soon as we mentioned his uncle and himself, he threw chairs at all the chiefs and went back out. He says, I don't believe you chiefs. From there on, then things went on down the line. That one woman they used, he already charged him, but they took him off. His husband took the blame for that $30,000. They gave him
Her husband. Took the blame.
Took the $15,000. When he comes out, they're going to give him another $15,000, but it never happened. And then, when she was still in Prince George, we moved her to Prince George to be near his husband. What happened is he got his brother-in-law to look after the house. And when he came back from Prince George, she runs back to him and get money. And he charged, his social worker told him, charge him. She charged Bill Soldi for 3 years. He's dead anyway. There's a guy who died. He took 3 years, but they let him out six months because he's too old to be in jail. And then next one he charged was my brother. And my brother beat her because he was in Vancouver. And my brother grew up in Prince Rupert at the same time. So that was dropped. Then she didn't want me.
Your brother didn't beat her, meaning to hit somebody. Yeah, He beat her to the court and won in court against the erroneous charges.
Yeah. Okay. And anyway, they put me up against her, and she said, she went to the band office. Says, I'm not charged. They're trying to hire me to charge you. I cannot charge you. I can't do that. But they subpoenaed her because it was easy. They know she gets drunk easy, so she was drunk when she went on my trial. She was sitting with me all the way through the trial. They dragged her in. The lawyer subpoenaed her, and the same lawyer made police drag her in. All she said is two words. Where this man lives? 2 miles. How far is from your place? 2 miles. That's all she said. They took her off real quick. And another lady jumped off the stand. He says, I'm not charging him. I'm not charging him. And then they went out and they they were up the stairs. And the one that was sitting beside me says, run up the stairs. You'll see everybody. The crown, everybody was talking to them to make them go back to trial and try to beat me in trial.
Quite a story.
Which they did.
And
the story gets even crazier about some things.
Yeah.
And it's 26 years later now, and it's still affecting his life and his ability to go home.
When I first got in jail, I said, give me the evidence. I'll take the program. Show me the doctor's report, police report. They said it's coming. They got tired of me, so they changed parole offer. Officers, as many as they can now while I was in jail. When I got out, I still said, I want still the program. I want to see the program. I'll take the program if there's evidence. They haven't today yet. And I know they'll never find one. Yeah. They're just keeping me away because I'm a high chief. I'm the Wet'suwet'en highest chief. They want me to keep my mouth shut so I don't. Right now, it went across Canada. I didn't give them permission. They think Wet'suwet'en Nation, we're carrier nation, we're not Tsuwet'en Nation. That Wet'suwet'en means the highest frog territory.
So what are your thoughts on these blockades that have taken place here in Canada in the last couple months?
Well, as far as I know, everybody back home, they're scared. All the reserves, 20 reserves are scared to step in because when they went to land claim, they only picked certain area to fight with. And the people, a lot of people are asking me, well, my cousin got on a newspaper, so I was happy when he did that, because one woman is in Ottawa fighting it, because these people are not accountable. They're in there for themselves and the lawyers.
What about Chief Frank Wu?
Wu is he's from Burns Lake. And these,
yes, he is.
Yeah, and he's from Burns Lake. Was, they call him Was. And that Was belongs to Spokes, that from Gixan, he's called Spokes. He's got two names. Only men can have two names when Carrier Nation give him a name and Gixan can give him a name. That's the only time they have two names. Otherwise, men has to have one name to a nation. And only a woman can hold four names, because they make their brother, uncle, or their grandpa bigger before they die. They make them the biggest chief. And women, they get four names because they make babies. They bring babies into the world. So they save all the names. Whoever they marry, they pick out the names.
Yeah.
From my perspective...
That's all. Chief Wu. And got some thoughts about him.
Okay, Chief Was. Now, Frank, I was surprised when he picked that name up, because they're floating it around through the people that's OW. So they made him grab it, because that belonged to one family in Broman Lake. That come from Spokes family.
Well, my understanding is that he took this title of hereditary chief from a group of women about a year ago, and that, he is the one that the Liberal government is negotiating with on very, very critical issues on behalf of the First Nations up there. So I'm asking myself, is this man got the authority to negotiate on all these people's behalf? Or what is going on there? There's a lot of questions to be asked about who he is, and all of a sudden, how he got this name of hereditary chief. He called himself Chief Wu, and he's the only one that the Liberal government are willing to negotiate with right now, as far as settlements up there and all this other stuff that's going on. There's a lot of skullduggery going on behind the scenes, and I want your thoughts on that.
See, Was, he's a Madik family. He's the Wolf Clan, number one clan. See, as four clans in one house. In English, you can say first cousin, second cousin, third cousin, the fourth cousin. We only go up to four. A woman has to be 115 before we can make a fifth clan, but there's none. There's no fourth clan. I mean, we go up to fourth clan, and that's how we operate. And this Was, he called himself Was, he took a name from another clan and using it so they can use him, because that guy, he's under Madik Pickett's family. Like Jeff Brown stole that name, but they don't pay attention to him. It belongs to Matthew Lolly. He deceased now. I don't know who holds it, but it belongs to Madik. That Frank Alec belongs to Madik family. I don't know. They used him.
But Was, asking Was, like... How he's saying that he has right to negotiate with the Liberal government,
yeah.
Right? But does he really? And yeah. What's your opinion on that? No, like, why doesn't he?
Yeah, he's under Sicani. They got this Sicani. That Sicani bill, like Wet'suwet'en. I threw out the name because my uncle came. He says, "What can we call?" They want to amalgamate all the clans together and call it one name. What can we name it? Me and my uncle gave him that name. Johnny David, oldest guy, says, no, don't give him the name. They take it for good. I says, let it come back to me. So I told Pat, call it Gwanu. And he called it Gwanu. It came back to me as Gwanu. And now when it went right across the country, it's called Frog.
Wet'suwet'en,
we call Frog.
But Was, you still haven't answered the reporter's question.
No, Was supposed to be only dealing with Sicani people. They said they don't deal with Burns Lake Batlats. We work with Burns Lake Batlats all through the years as a four clan and a four houses. Just, they were going in court case, so they call themselves Sicani, and we, the other people call Wet'suwet'en, but Frank, I don't know what he's doing there. All of a sudden he's over because OW can't get a real big chief. And if he's on their side, they grab him because they help him get that name.
He can't negotiate for
them. He shouldn't be negotiating for them.
He does not represent.
He does not represent. He represents Matik Wolf Clan. And like somebody said, they're not accountable to the reserves. They never was.
Are you still there? Hello?
Barry, you're muted.
Hey, okay, you are still
Barry.
There. We didn't know.
Barry, you're muted. Okay, he has something wrong, folks.
Okay.
I don't know what he's done.
So are we still talking to the people in you and
yes,
without
you are.
Barry?
Barry, drop off the call and then come back in, please.
Okay.
Hello, Barry. Drop off the call and come back in.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hello? Yes, we can
hear you. I don't know what happened there. I really have no idea. All of a sudden, my microphone stopped working, folks. So I have no idea what happened there, okay? My apologies. But if you can hear me now, then we're good to go. And where did we leave off?
We don't know, because I think Chief was talking, but we didn't know if the people were hearing it or if you were hearing it.
Okay, well, listen, let's shift the conversation to something else that I kind of want to get your guys' thoughts on. And that, of course, is this coronavirus madness that we see going on in the world right now. What are your thoughts on that, guys? Exactly what's happening right now. Let's put it that way. What do you think is actually happening right now?
A lot of people are buying toilet paper that we're laughing at. That's exactly what our thoughts are. We'd be commenting on people buying toilet paper for no reason. What are they going to do with it?
What is this thing about toilet paper? Can somebody explain that to me? Because I still don't understand why people are filling their carts full of toilet paper and not buying food. Am I missing something here?
Exactly.
I just don't get it. I've asked a bunch of people to please try and explain. Is there anybody in this group that can explain that to me? Because I would really like to understand the rationale of toilet paper apocalypse that we're seeing right now.
Yes, exactly. Well,
Was getting authority over me. He's supposed to ask me.
Oh, sorry. Chief wants to actually, he wants to clarify something about WAS.
Okay.
And maybe abandon this toilet paper issue for a moment. I wonder if WAS is actually stocking up on it. Anyway, he would like to speak a bit more about WAS. There you go, Chief.
Okay, this WAS is put in for a year because the OW can't find nobody as a chief and they're trying to use him. But WAS, he knows as a chief, he's supposed to talk to me first if I allow him. I haven't allowed nobody under OW because I set it down as a treaty office. I set it down because land claim is over. It's over. And then, to me, I was in Vancouver. I'm with the coalition. I was sitting there with them, and then I told them, you guys are ashamed to call me the highest chief. And I am the highest chief. I'm 73. I says, one Gloria George, you're my father clan. I know who's my father clan. I know who I'm for father clan, too. So it's just like father clan putting me in jail with them. So I'm trying to clarify that. Well, to me, they're supposed to bring me home. If they had a policeman, RCMP from Smithers, they adopt them in my clan without asking me. And she was going against me in the court. And when I'm no good, you're supposed to bring me home and work with me at home. But she never went to Patlas. They used her at the hereditary OW office. We don't call them hereditary chiefs because they call themselves Gwinu. They call themselves Wet'suwet'en. They're not Wet'suwet'en. They come from Kitsikukla. Their name still comes from there.
Well, the reason I asked about it there, sir, is because of the reports that I saw about how he is negotiating with the Liberal government behind closed doors without disclosing the terms of the agreement prior to it being signed, and he is negotiating on behalf of a lot of people up there in the north. And as far as I can see, and what I understand of the process of him acquiring the label of hereditary chief, it had no legal ramifications at all. It wasn't a legal. What they did was illegal, taking those titles from those ladies and calling himself a hereditary chief. And a year later, doing these mass negotiations with the Liberal government on your people's behalf. And you're not allowed to know what is going on behind closed doors. That's kind of, you know, I'd like to hear what you think about that. And why is this allowed to go on? Because some of the changes could be monumental. Go ahead.
Because when they first moved back, pretend they were going to Batlats, and they know our people are quiet. They don't silence people. We use Batlats for our own. There's 20 reserves. You know, we're all quiet. We don't know. They're walking in. Like I said it down, I don't know what they're doing. There shouldn't be OW. There should be no Fifth Clan. I don't know where they come from.
It seems like they have a lot of power.
They have any authority, though,
They don't have authority. They don't come in Batlats. They got no authority. And some people are stealing. My chief name, Grandpa.
Hold on, he's just trying to think of a name.
Yeah, my grandpa's name is stolen from a lady still alive, and they're sitting in there. And that guy's got two names, and that guy ain't supposed to be, because his mom and dad are related, married, and they ain't supposed to get a name, but they got a name. They're trying to build.
How do people get names? How do they steal them? That's what the reporter's asking. Yeah. He said, did they steal these names from those three ladies?
What they do, they go different town. They won't come in the Batlats. It's not handed down. Whatever they think, they find a name, they go to Houston, they put up a little party and get a name. They go somewhere to get a name. We don't know. All of a sudden, we find who they are, and that's what they say, who they are. But
how can they get a name? Do they just pluck it out of the air? Does somebody give it to them?
But some people die. They fight over that. So people are scared. Our reserve Batlats is scared. They kind of bang on their table. Their name's supposed to be theirs. No, it's not.
One thing I learned when I went up there I learned that names can be left empty or standing in the potlatch, since the traditional potlatch system is falling away to this new five clans and chiefs and reserve chiefs and hereditary chiefs working together and all this, is that if you don't have a potlatch to give the name to one of the four, your son, your brother, that it can remain empty. And if the family doesn't stand up to take the name, that name and chief sort of can remain empty. And these people, and that's how they sort of got in. Nobody gave it to them.
Yeah. I just find it kind of odd that a person can all of a sudden acquire the name of a hereditary chief, and that person being recognized by the government as a hereditary chief, when all he's done is taken that name from an actual female that was a hereditary chief. And my understanding was that she was standing for the development of the pipelines. And according to what I've looked into, this Chief Wu, he is standing against pipelines. So ask yourself a few questions of what's actually going on behind the scenes here.
See, what they've done is those people signed behind our back. We didn't know. And then when it came out, my son questioned it. They almost gang up on him. They signed it, and the same people are blocking it. Why sign something and block it? Right now, if there's Hazleton, Smithers, Houston, Telcor sign for the pipeline, I have to go along with them, because that's how our community functioned all the way through. Now, them guys sign, and they're blocking it. I couldn't understand that neither.
Well, 20 bands along the line have all agreed. The elected representatives of those bands and the bands themselves have all wanted and agreed to the pipeline going forward. You have a very, very small group of people that are causing this to come to kind of crazy situations that we're seeing in the last little while. They're very, very small percentage, very, very small groups of people I have looked into these demonstrators that are showing up on the pipelines and on the rail lines. They're, you know, very few of them are actually First Nations from this part of the world. That a lot of them are American and demonstrators from Toronto. They're actually being flown out here and are fully professional paid demonstrators. That if you ask them what they're actually demonstrating against, they are stuck for an answer. All they know is that they're supposed to stand there and hold the sign. And that's what we're dealing with in Canada, and it's all coming from organizations like the Tides Foundation, who, of course, are funded by guys like George Soros. I see a lot of this going on, and I wonder why the First Nations allow this to go on, that why you don't address this problem yourself and call out this very small group of people that are stopping a lot of prosperity, in my opinion.
Well, see, that's why they're in Smithers. If they're chiefs, they would have been in Morristown, and they would have been under the Batlas, but they don't want us to know. They hire running from the reserves. That's what they're doing. And soon that roadblock went on, right away they're negotiating with them.
I think the Liberal government might have a little bit to do with it, and the Fifth Clan and business. Like, I've been reading about this like crazy, and they're talking about the oil. They're talking about extraction of minerals. They're talking about the forestry, pulp and paper. And then we're talking about all of this gas lines. The Liberals and the Fifth Clan should, first of all, I don't think that they should be negotiating behind closed doors. That's just, it's not right. And it's not just me or any of us, it's the whole nation's asking that. People have the right to know what's going on. Yeah, they don't have the right to negotiate at all, like the people. And someone's getting paid off to push this through without proper authority from the people that are in control, that are in charge up there. It's their land, right? It's the whole Carrier Nation. And you know what? What happened to Chief 25 years ago, and those other chiefs that some died in jail, some had to take push-offs and say yes, that they did these horrible things to girls that they never did, to get out. If they can dupe us 25 years ago, and we've got proof here, you don't think they're duping us now better, with better technology, bigger money, more resources, more things they want? Right? Like, I don't know who's playing this game, but it just seems to me when I was up there, they're pulling the wool right over everybody's eyes, and they're starting with the hereditary system. Yeah, people don't want it up there. They want to push it through, or people do want it. I don't even know. I don't know. My friend Bob's got something he likes to say. What is it, Bob? Tell me what it is I'm supposed to tell the people of Canada and the world about this.
Sorry, it's okay. The gas line, which is...
Why don't you get somebody else on the mic there and let them have a talk?
Yeah. Right, everybody. Bob here, who's a big supporter of Chief and friend of ours. We call ourselves the Silverbacks.
Well, put Bob on the mic.
Here, get near the mic, Bob, and say what you got to say.
Okay. The gas line has already been approved by the whole nation, the Carrier Nation, and all the houses. These people have come up and have tried to stop it for an unknown reason, or to try to get some other deal going with the government. The deal's already gone through. They built schools and that. The First Nations have built their own schools for the pipeline, and now they're trying to stop it. And nobody up there knows the reason why, and neither do the chiefs. Hereditary chiefs. They're very quiet people, but the time has come for Chief here to speak up.
That's our chief, and obviously a lot of Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs are speaking out right now about their hereditary system, but what happened before? Yeah, they've got to get their own hereditary system back in order to be able to control their lands and all the lands around, and the whole Carrier Nation has to, and they can't pick apart and let WAS or anyone. I don't know. I don't even know anymore, but there's a lot of questions that need to be answered here. And we can't keep doing it behind closed doors.
And WAS does not represent the hereditary chiefs, period.
Right now, WAS shouldn't be representing them, because OW had said themselves, we don't want Burnslake in. We do Burns Lake, Highgillgate, Morristown, Fraser Lake. We all do our batlats. We all come from everywhere. We're 20 reserve. They don't know what's going on, because I thought the land claim was over. It's over, but they put me in jail to open it again. The office is closed, treaty office. I don't know where this OW come from.
Well, the bottom line is this government is hell-bent on stopping any kind of development of pipelines or anything to do with oil in Canada. The bottom line is. So what we're seeing going on right now is these negotiations that, as far as I can understand, are totally illegal, that this gentleman really has no claim to this title. Yet, like I said, he's the one and the only one that's negotiating with the Liberal government. That really, to me, stinks of high heaven. And it's something that I think you people and everybody else involved need to call out right away.
See, that's done all.
You can't allow something like this to fester.
That's all done without my permission. And then,
You got to get this message out to everybody that is in your world. So go ahead.
Okay, we got a coalition against them. How come they don't talk to them? We got coalition that's fighting them for last 2-3 years. I sit on that board.
Got to ask yourself why you're not getting the coverage that you should then. Go ahead. Because
they've been trying to bury it. The real 16 chiefs, hereditary chiefs, need to sit. The real ones. They all need to be dug out. I've been able to name some of them from Chief telling me and from investigating up there. But there's 16. There's 4 houses. By 4, right? So who are the 4 people in house?
There's 4 house, 4 clans.
4 clans, so there's...
4 in each house. So we all... And then they look at the House of Many Eyes as the lead over them. They're supposed to contact the head of the House of Many Eyes. They haven't done that since they moved back.
Well, I'm kind of getting a learning experience today because a lot of this stuff I didn't know about. So it's always good to hear about... learning about new stuff. And kind of rolls around in my brain and trying to make sense of it all.
Yeah.
I would love to find the remaining chiefs, the 4 chiefs we know of, the frog, the 4 beavers, the 4 caribou, and the 4 wolf. Hey, there's 4 chiefs, and that's what they call them, sub-chiefs, lower chiefs. What does the Globe and Mail call them? Like, there's different lesser chiefs, but who are... I love to put that family tree together right now and know exactly who owns what one and what chief should be there. Who should be sitting there in Wass's position and why? Like, why was he able to take that woman's chief status, hereditary chief status? Like, really, why? And why was it given away? And why? Well, we know why they might not have said anything as their whole hereditary system falls apart is they're really quiet people. And they're very friendly. And I was just accepted up there. I don't know, maybe because I had a different attitude, but I kind of had this, you know, I was with a girl driver and some kids. And we had some questions and people answered our questions and welcomed us. They're lovely, lovely people, but very quiet, I realized. And a lot of them, like my daughter, who's doing a grade 9-10 project, was asking other teenagers and kids, how is it in your family? Do you know what's going on? They didn't. They didn't know what was, you know, their future. And it was really, it's crazy. A lot of them don't even know what's going on. Everything's in secret. And if you go in the newspaper, nobody knows when meetings are. You know, nobody wants to talk here, there. There's so much history amongst the families and that. But I like to ask the question, who are the 16 hereditary chiefs in a 4x4 system? That's the way it works, northeast, southwest. That's what Chief has explained. And who are they, and where are they?
Well, anytime that information is being withheld or manipulated, you know something's going on behind the scene. And what we're talking about here just sounds like another example of it to me. But skullduggery reigns supreme, doesn't it?
It yep. sure does.
Yeah, they're trying hard because they've got nothing to lose when they move back.
Yeah, people are afraid to talk. People are afraid to say what their truth is, and it's what their truth is. And then there's the truth, right? A lot of people don't know things. A lot of people think they know more than they do. And families are being threatened, and their way of life is being threatened ever since land claims started in 95. You know, well, no, before that, 80s. Right, that's when the land claim started up there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Of all the people exiled in the Carrier Nation, Stanley is the only one that has not been allowed to go home. All of the other ones did. But again, they accepted pleas that were not true to be able to go home. And payoffs, big payoffs. And the payoffs of the government during land claim that I've heard about and the names, it would just shock you. And these people are around still today, clearly putting their business in it. It's 26 years. Why can't Stanley go home? We've talked to a few people, and there, the one, what's her, Tate, Ellen Tate, she said that, hold on, I don't want to misquote, but she said that she knows Stanley, and that Stan has paid his dues, and reconciliation is in order. It should have been a while ago. So, like, what is that? Like, people up there are recognizing Stan is the chief, and he should be there.
Okay, that's 5 years ago. Mike Smith said, Stanley, I read about you.
Mike Smith is Mike's, a lawyer.
He's a judge.
A judge, sorry.
A judge. And he said, Stanley, I read all about you. I know all about you. You done good in jail. You did good out there. You did going home. I was going home. And I don't think nobody can oppose that. And then the lawyer jumped up. He says, I'm opposing it. He says, no. He says, give me the papers. Give me the bridges. Give me everything. You got it? He says, no, don't you ever talk again. Then he started talking to me again. He said he's proud to send me home for 2 weeks for Christmas. I used to get that every winter, go home for Christmas. They cut that out now. The last 3 years, I haven't went home. They made that PCR against me. Those people that move in the ban office now, took them 30 years to get in there. Finally, as soon as I got in there, put PCR against me. PCR is ban resolution. I never used it. Ban council resolution. And I never used it against them when they moved back. They said it's not allowed to use against your own native, but it's been proven against me.
Interesting.
You know, years ago, 25 years ago, Stan thought the pipeline was not a good thing. Right now, like he said, right now the most important thing for him is to tell the truth for the people. He's for the people. And right now, he knows that the people up there want the pipeline. So he wants to work to have the pipeline too, because that's what his people, and that's who he needs to look after. And even though in this 25 years, like if you look back to what his stance was during land claims and the pipeline 25 years ago, and if you look today, his people want the gas pipeline. They think it's a good thing. So Chief wants what his people wants safely.
Yeah, and the people that are opposing it haven't got a clue what they're talking about, because the more natural gas that we can export to China, it's less coal that's going to be burned in China to generate hydroelectricity. China produces 30% of our carbon, almost 30% of the carbon in our atmosphere on the planet Earth today. So any natural gas that arrives in China is going to have a monumental effect on greenhouse gases, or our so-called greenhouse gases. So we're shooting ourselves in the foot by stopping this pipeline if we truly care about the environment.
Yeah, we're not, and we got to say that we're not talking about any other line except for the gas line, because a lot of times people with the media saturation of pipelines, how about the pipeline Canada owns? Are we all own? You know, how about this pipeline? How, you know, the fact that the chiefs up there are also negotiating on pipelines that are being abandoned carrying bitumen. That's a completely different pipeline story too. Right, mm-hmm. We're talking about the gas pipeline, pipeline, period, right now.
Exactly. And the benefits are, as far as I'm concerned, the benefits way out any detrimental possibilities to the environment. Even with oil pipelines themselves, I mean, if it's a choice between trains, and we see how often they derail and what effect they have, and then we talk about the leaks in pipelines and how they're monitored, sure, they get the odd leak, but we don't see the catastrophic releases that we do with tankers leaving the highway. Isn't it kind of weird we've had 5 major truck or train accidents in the last 30 days in Canada? 5 major derailments.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, those numbers are unheard of. You hear about derailments once in a while, but we've had 5 major derailments in Canada in the last 30 days. And you got to ask yourself why. And they all are, a lot of them, or most of them, are centered up in this area of the world.
Huh.
Yeah, big one in Prince George. You go on the internet and punch up train derailments in Canada in the last 30 days, and it's actually shocking. So why is that all of a sudden happening? There's a question to be asked. Is it a coincidence? Or is there somebody actually sabotaging rail lines? Well, we know that the people that we're dealing with in Canada, these radicals that are being funded, tied into organizations like Antifa, there's nothing really outside of their playbook. Anything to create civil distress is what they're into. And it makes asks a lot of questions to be asked. Now the police won't investigate that. You've got to ask the question why.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
There's so some much of the radicals.
Well, there's so much corruption in Canada, folks. It really is. There's so much corruption in our government that, you know, I look at this stuff all the time, and it just absolutely boggles my mind what is going on in this country right now. And it's like we said earlier in the show, what's it going to take for people to wake up and realize that this is a very serious fight that we're into? And
when there's not enough toilet paper in the world.
Maybe when toilet paper runs out and we can't get it anymore, maybe that'll be the trigger mechanism we need to get the general population involved. I hope that's what it takes.
You know
what
I think?
That's all it takes. And if you have toilet paper, you have rolls in your garage, man. You'll be able to sell them in a few days for some serious money.
Really? Isn't it? I find it peculiar right now that Trudeau has coronavirus, or his wife does, putting him in his house to deal with the virus, to deal with Trump, the election, to deal with his own and the UN and the Wet'suwet'en people. And he's got, his wife, Sophie's got the coronavirus. Wow. I just find that really, really strange and coincidental.
Oh,
I wonder
convenient,
if they have
convenient.
Enough toilet paper.
Don't want to show up in public for a week. Oh, I've got the virus. I'm in my house.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows what's actually going on? But nothing's out of the playbook.
Chief is standing here beside me, and he wants to put out an invitation to have a talk. Go ahead, Chief.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to Caroline Bennett, they call her. She's a negotiator from Ottawa, and there's Scott Fraser, or Fraser Scott. They should come and see me, and otherwise just going to go on fighting. I tried to stop it a long time ago. They had roadblocks. I took it off, and the only way, like I said, I sat down the last treaty office, and they put me in jail. And from there on, they're all married together, lawyers and prosecutors.
You're inviting them to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm inviting them to talk to me by Carol Bennett and Scott Fraser. I'll talk with them. It'll make it lots easier. Otherwise, they give them more money, they'll do more roadblocks. I can see that. I said that before. I said, you give them money, they'll have roadblocks. Since they moved back, the day they moved back, they got their rights back. I seen roadblocks as the land claim went. I stopped most of me. Three chiefs tried to stop it. Three of us went to jail. Three of us went to court. One didn't go to court because he was renting off the other lawyer. So the other one died in jail. His name came from a big family from Francis Lake. And he never made it out. I made it out. And they put legal aid, won't touch me because I'm in jail. And that legal aid is supposed to be for the people in jail.
Now, I got a question for you. If a lawyer represents a party of people, such as employees of a band office, and they take a lawyer and they sue the elected chief, who is Stan, and then that lawyer that they used, and they all gotten their jobs back at the band office and money and compensation, and then that lawyer who represented them against that elected chief, Stan, solicits Stan, when this erroneous charge comes up of all these women, and says, I'll be your lawyer. Isn't that illegal? I was just curious, because that's what happened. And then that lawyer becomes higher and becomes a Crown prosecutor. And then he becomes a judge.
Nothing to see there, man.
Nothing, I know. But I don't think that's illegal, right? I don't know about it, but it sure seems illegal to me and kind of stinks a lot. Right up into year 26 of his, what did you say, Bob? Yeah, like, I just wanted to put that out there and ask if something like that is actually legal. Because I don't think that it is. I've tried to get a lawyer for something, and then when I go there, they say, oh, sorry, we can't help you because we have had a court, we've represented the other party before. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, it's a little bit of a conflict of judicial interest.
Well, it all depends on what side of the fence you are on. If you're on their side of the fence, it's legal as heck. If you're on our side of the fence, you're in jail for 10 years.
Or more, yeah.
Or more, okay? So we said this earlier in the show that there is no law in Canada anymore. You only have to look at the commissioner of the RCMP in Canada, Brenda Leckie, and follow her background, find out that she is directly related to Bill Monroe, that she is also a member of the Council of Foreign Relations, that she attended Bilderberg meetings at 20 years old, and now appointed RCMP commissioner, handpicked, of course, by Justin Trudeau. And we see the lack of the RCMP enforcing laws in Canada. We're in a full-blown fascist dictatorship in Canada, and people don't see it, folks. My thoughts. We only got a couple minutes left here. I'm going to ask you guys for your last thoughts. I want to thank you for joining me today. I've learned some things in the last hour, and thanks for taking time and joining me, Chief, and Katie, and whoever else is sitting in the room. Thanks for coming in today. And I'll give you a couple minutes to say something, and we'll shut up the show for the week.
Thank you, Chief.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you guys for putting me on as a high chief. I wish you all well, because I hope something comes out of this. I like to see the negotiator talk to me, and then it'll be easy. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening to our crazy interview with Chief. He's amazing, and I want him to. We all in this room love him, and we want him and the whole Wet'suwet'en people to go to look at their traditional potlatch system. Then I want every Canadian out there to look at their judicial system and how this can happen to anybody, anybody. Anyway, thank you all very much.
Well, thank you, guys. And whoever else in the room here, thanks for joining me. Okay, guys, well, that's it for this show. And I'm going to end the show with a couple thoughts of my own here. We are right now in society seeing a state of chaos that I don't think any of us ever have seen in our lifetime. That we see events unfolding in front of us that are absolutely mind-boggling, and we see society falling into a state of chaos. Doesn't matter where we look or what we look at right now, we see chaos, and it seems to be building at light speed. All I'm going to say to you guys is that you've got to keep your feet on the ground, but do not be deceived by agendas that are being played out in front of our faces right now, that everything you see is not the way it is, and that anything that comes from mainstream media being propagated by agencies in the world has agenda tied all to it. You've got to figure that out. You've got to stay outside the box. Please, please connect yourself spiritually, because when the poop does hit the fan, which I believe it's going to here in the near future, you're going to need that spiritual connection. It's the only thing you're going to have to fall back on. Thanks for joining me this week. Great. Thanks to my guests. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. God bless you all. Have a great week. Bye for now.